Counsel for the appellant? Did I pronounce that correctly, counsel?
You pronounced Jacobs correctly, Your Honor.
All right. what should the second name be?
Rakakis.
Rakakis, very
He's
good.
He's the district attorney for Orange County.
Very good.
Good morning. This action involves Michael Jacobs. Michael Jacobs was a long-term employee of the County of Orange, and he engaged in free speech by going to the press with information that high public officials in law enforcement of Orange County had engaged in criminal and improper conduct. He did it at great risk. He suffered the loss of his 25-year career with Orange County. The core issue at the heart of this appeal is whether or not the United States District Court could deny Mr. Jacobs the federal forum which under 42 U.S.C. section 1983 and the jurisdiction statutes of federal courts grant him the right to pursue federal claims in a federal court. Congress gave him that right, and it is our position that the district court cannot take that right away from him.
My question to you is, would a final decision in the state court have a res judicata effect on the 1983 claim in the federal court?
A final decision probably would. That's why what the district court did is so dangerous. Because under the full faith and credit clause, a decision by the trial state court action is not final. It is not to be given any dignity and respect in the district court. And the district court cannot wait till it becomes final to undermine the full faith and credit clause. That's what Judge Taylor in the district court wanted to do. He said, well, let's wait and see that what happens in the Court of Appeal, in the California Supreme Court, in the state court action.
Well, in the Court of Appeal, what was the date of argument?
It was a couple of months ago. I think Mr. Watkins was involved in that. It has been submitted.
Yeah.
And
California has a 90-day rule, doesn't it, with respect to decisions?
Right, and it's due any day now.
Any day now?
Yes. And
are you just hoping if you get into federal court, it'll get heard before that decision comes out? Are you?
Well, I'm hoping that decision will be reversed.
Well.
And then we can go into federal court and proceed. But I'm hoping that this court has the ability not to allow the erroneous decision of the district court judge. What I'm concerned about is this. This court can overturn a district court judge under the Colorado River Doctrine, under the Landis case and its progeny. The stay issued by the district court judge was clearly improper under appropriate Ninth Circuit United States Supreme Court precedent.
You may be right on the law, but let me ask one other side issue. And the Supreme Court has been considering recently this issue of, not the issue of stay, but the issue of public comment.
I believe it's Sabalos versus Garcetti.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if that would provide an additional grounds, however, for a district judge to stay pending a decision that's forthcoming from the Supreme Court or new law, for example, from the Supreme Court in the very area that you're complaining of.
Well, the Garcetti case, I think that there's a factual distinction here, but I know of no authority which would deprive Mr. Jacobs of his right to proceed in this case pending a Supreme Court decision. Maybe that would have an effect, but that is also imminent. I mean, I understand the Garcetti case was just recently re-argued, I think the decision is imminent.
Isn't that an additional justification to, I mean, the district judge here, of course, wasn't relying on it in this instance, but isn't that an additional justification for staying the matter until we see what result? So we know what the
law is. I think that is within the province of the district court judge. We're here on a procedural issue involving another stay. Waiting for the Garcetti decision to come down the United States Supreme Court, that, I think, the discretion, there's no requirement that a district court judge stay a case because something's pending in the United States Supreme Court. That is that district court judge's discretion. And I don't believe that the Ninth Circuit can usurp that discretion. I think what the Ninth Circuit could do is decide this case, send it back to the district court I would like to see an order to say, please try this case immediately. I think you have the authority to do that, or set it for trial immediately.
So we've got two potential things that could just moot this appeal, moot this case. One is forthcoming decision by California, and the other is a change of the law or a more clear standard on the law from the Supreme Court.
Yeah, but that's exactly why this court has to rule, because to decide this case on the potential of mootness is to turn the full faith and credit clause on its head. What you're saying is we're going to allow the district court decision, which is we're going to do the same thing the district court did, where Mr. Jacobs is entitled to his day in court on his 1983 action, and we're going to deny him that because there's a state court case pending. And under all the criteria in Colorado River, under the Landis case, in the opposition brief, they cited a case, Lockyer versus Martek, or Martin, I think. And that case discussed a Landis Supreme Court case from the 1930s. And in the Landis case, the court said that where there's potential harm to the other litigant, the one not seeking the stay, the court can only issue the stay where there is going to be a hardship or inequity, okay, for the person seeking the stay.
Well, you can understand the motivation of the district judge, the reluctance. You've even heard us ask questions: how soon will the Supreme Court, the California court, be issuing its decision? The reluctance is you have a right, of course, to split up your causes of action. You've got arbitration here, state court lawsuit and judgment, and a federal court lawsuit. But you can understand the district judge's reluctance. It doesn't necessarily say or suggest that your client is forum shopping. You've got a right, as I say, to split up those causes of action into different forums. But the district judge is attempting to defer to potentially final rulings in those areas to prior proceedings in the state court.
I am completely sympathetic with the district court judge. He has a heavy docket, a lot of criminal cases. I mean, you're there. You know what it's like. He's got all these civil cases. But that's a policy issue. He has to follow precedent, and he didn't do that. So as sympathetic I might be with the district judge, the reality is he does not have the right to deprive Mr. Jacobs of an action, to stay the case. And in this Lockyer Ninth Circuit decision, being required to defend a suit without more does not constitute a clear case of hardship or inequity within the meaning of Landis. That's Judge Taylor talked about in his decision, you know, for the convenience of the court and to serve justice, we were all set for trial. We'd gone through pretrial, discovery. We did everything we could in the federal court case to get ready for trial. He pulled the rug out from under us. And I understand his motivation, but his motivation is not consistent with his obligation under the law and under the doctrines that the Ninth Circuit and the U.S. Supreme Court have embraced in Colorado River, the Landis case, and most recently in the Lockyer case. And I didn't make the law that said a state trial court judgment is not final. Because it's not final, the district court cannot give it full faith and credit. I think it trumps the whole purpose of the full faith and credit clause of the Constitution to allow a district court to say, okay, it may not be final, but I'm going to make sure and not do anything on my case until it becomes final. And until the state changes the finality rule or until the full faith and credit clause is changed in a constitutional amendment or until Colorado River or Landis or Lockyer is overturned, I think we have to proceed to rule in this case, not to hold off on your obligations, to rule in this case consistent with the law. And if they make a motion after the ruling in court saying, well, now we have full faith and credit and finality, we should deal with that motion at that time and that appeal at that time. I don't think anticipating mootness is consistent with the obligations that these cases suggest are required of the court.
Thank you, counsel. Your time has expired.
Thank you.
We'll hear from the government.
Morning. May it please the court. This case was tried. Mr. Jacobs had not a day in court, but he had 6 weeks in court. All of the issues were tried to a jury. And in anticipation of what I assumed would be a submission of not only the so-called whistleblower claim, but also the First Amendment claim to the jury, we fully briefed that. We urged instructions upon the court. And at that point, Mr. Jacobs made an affirmative election not to go forward with that theory of recovery.
Well, he was carefully carving out that cause of action so he could preserve it for the federal court.
Well, and he did so at great risk. Under MIGRA and Takahashi, it's clear that I think one of the courts pointed out that, you know, we're all entitled to one day in court, but few two.
Counsel,
that's true.
Let me ask. You cite the Landis case. If the Landis case dealt with a stay involving two federal courts,
right,
after Colorado River, do you have any case to cite that applies Landis to parallel proceedings in the federal court and the state court?
Well, you know, I don't believe we have cited any cases to that effect. The closest, of course, you'd come, well, you go way back to 1933 with the Robinson case, but that's a state court case. But in that case,
what do you rely to say that the stay was improper here? It's dealing with federal, state.
MIGRA and Takahashi clearly point out that should the Court of Appeal in California uphold the judgment of the trial court, then this matter is over.
Said it would be res judicata, but it's not yet.
I know. So then the proposition is, is the law seriously contemplating that we speed over to the federal courthouse with the second lawsuit, and so long as we can get it tried before the Court of Appeal renders a decision, that's somehow worthy of that kind of a procedure as opposed to what we clearly all recognize. And I don't hear Mr. Jacobs dispute that he's had his trial, and that should it be affirmed, that's the end of the matter.
Taking advantage of the law that he says permits him to do exactly what he's doing, whether it's lawyering, whatever it is, he's permitted under the law. And I'm asking, is there anything under the law that would not permit him to do this?
There's nothing under the law that permits him to do it, and there's no case that I'm aware of specifically that catches the judgments in this time frame that has ruled on that. And there's none, of course, authorizing it. And I think a district court confronted with a situation where a litigant only 2 months before showing up in the district court's doorstep has had an adverse ruling comes to that district court saying, now I want a second trial with a different theory. Any district court is going to say, wait. That doesn't sound
It's understandable right. Why the district court judge did what he did, but my only question is, does the law require it?
Well, in California, the law would require it under Robinson. Robinson Court reversed the denial of the issuance of a continuance under these same circumstances. The Robinson Court of Appeal 75 years ago said, no, that continuance should have been issued to allow that judgment to ripen. So I think what we're confronted with here is there's no dispute that the issues that Mr. Jacobs wishes to pursue now in the federal forum could have and should have been pursued in the state forum.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The case just argued will be submitted for decision, and we will hear argument in United States versus Bonington.